We're back on the Michael Coolidge Show, live Rise Broadband Studios, as we get ready for our 2015 Michael Coolidge Show all day Christmas open house. Later today, we should say. The decorations are up. The food is on its way. The drink is on its way. The eggnog is on its way. The popcorns are popping. And it's going to be a lot of fun. We hope you can make it. Go to the Facebook page for the Michael Coolidge Show for more information. Joining us on the phone in Washington, D.C., our friend and yours, Gail Trotter. Gail, welcome back.
Great to be with you, Michael.
Let's start off with happy stuff, can we, shall we, before we get into
Please.
This bad stuff? Yes. So last we talked with you, I believe, was the day or the week of Thanksgiving. And first of all, well, before we get to your Thanksgiving, you were on Megyn Kelly the night before Thanksgiving. Am I right?
Yes, I was. It was a last-minute request, so I had to scramble and get down there, and it was a great opportunity to highlight my op-ed that I'd written for the Washington Times earlier that week.
Yeah, I mean, I know you do a lot of TV, and you've been on Fox TV before, or Fox News, and other things, but Megyn Kelly's show, I mean, it doesn't get much hotter a TV show than Megyn Kelly. You did fantastic, by the way. We DVR'd the second broadcast of it and watched it the next morning.
Thank you.
We were just like, woohoo, there's Kelly. You looked
Thank
great,
you.
And you sounded
being
great.
Being in the green room and being able to see all of my favorite people who were also on her show and other shows was very exciting, too. Sebastian Gorka was there, and he is a professor at the Marine Corps University, and he was on talking about recent events, and Howie Kurtz was there. He has a show on Sunday morning.
Oh, yeah, I watched that. I Media Buzz. I watched that every Sunday.
Yes. Yeah, I've gotten to know him a little bit, so it was fun kind of catching up with both of them. It was an added bonus for the appearance.
Yeah, and that had to be just so cool. And also, you know, getting to broadcast your thoughts to the whole nation to the tune of millions and millions of viewers. Very, very cool. Now, how was your Thanksgiving? I have to ask you.
It was amazing, and mostly because I didn't have to cook anything but one side dish, so I just showed up and ate a lot.
So you didn't host? You had other people, or you went to someone else's house?
I went to somebody else's house. Actually, my sister's house, she was about 40 minutes away from our house, and we descended with our eight people, and like a horde of locusts, you know, comes in and eats everything. How about your Thanksgiving? Did you stay in the area, or did you?
We did. We stuck around. We ate with, it was six of us total, two dogs and six adults. And it was a lot of fun. We watched some football. There was a lot of good football games. And we were able to finish it in time to do some Thanksgiving Eve shopping, where we got some prizes that we're going to give out at our big Christmas party later today, like a 50-inch TV and a 40-inch TV. We got some pretty good deals on. And some of our listeners are going to go home with them tonight at a Christmas party.
That is awesome.
You're in Washington, D.C. I know you're not going to be able to make our party here in Rochelle, Illinois, right?
I wish I could, and especially now that I know that there are prizes, who would
yes,
want to make
Yes, there's prizes.
That?
My very good friend, Jamie, I won't say her last name. I won't even say if it's a male or female. Could be male, could be female. Just came in and brought some delicious, is that alcohol? What is it? It's some sort of delicious product that I just can't wait to drink. And that was very sweet of you as she is stopping by and helping us get ready for a party. And you got the sugar too for the hot chocolate. Thank you. Yes, we're in a very festive mood here, Gail, in the Rise Broadband Studios. And we wish we didn't have to talk about bad stuff, but we have to. So let's talk about this awful reaction that so many people have had to the San Bernardino shooting and this whole shaming that's gone on about
right
praying. I don't know, just I know that the topic of the coarseness of our civil discourse has gotten worse over the years, but this might be the worst I've ever seen it. What do you make of this whole thing, the discussion about it? I'm talking about,
well, it's interesting because I saw a lot of Twitter comments, tweets about, you know, trying to call out politicians who support the Second Amendment and support preserving our liberty for saying that their thoughts and prayers were with the victims and the families of the San Bernardino terrorist attack. And I saw that all going on, and that didn't really surprise me so much because, you know, Twitter is kind of a cesspool, so it's really not that surprising that you'd see stuff like that. But then when the New York Daily News had as their cover talking about kind of calling out Lindsey Graham and Ted Cruz and a couple other Republican politicians and showing their tweets saying our thoughts and prayers are with the victims and then saying, splashed across the headline or the front of the New York Daily News saying God isn't going to fix this. And that to me was pretty surprising because they weren't, you know, the paper itself is a tabloid and it has a lot of opinion on the inside, but usually don't see that kind of opinion previously making it to the front page. And clearly, they weren't calling out Democratic politicians or leaders who had said the same thing. President Obama even said the same thing. Our thoughts and our prayers are with the victims.
Right.
And so it was purely an unveiled attempt to get across a political message in a very shocking and emotional way.
I kind of at that point when I saw this going on, I kind of decided in my mind, and not that I have any sort of you know, influence or power in this giant discussion, but I said I don't even take seriously people anymore. Like to me, they're not part of the sort of adult conversation about this anymore. You know,
right?
Like I try to respect those that disagree with me on abortion or on gun rights. Or on how we face terrorism or how we maybe stop mass shootings. But if you are one of those, you know, I don't defriend people on Facebook. I don't believe in it. But if I ever were to, it would be for comments and stuff like this, where it's just like, please get out of my life and get out of this conversation. I don't want to hear your opinion because I frankly don't respect it.
Well, it's interesting because you have to think about the premise level that people like the editors of the New York Daily News are operating under. The premise level is that something can be done, that gun control can stop these attacks from happening, and
right,
that it's only the politician's stubbornness or contributions from groups like the National Rifle Association that are stopping them from doing it. So I think we all come from the same place. We see these attacks not only in San Bernardino, but also Paris quite recently. And we think, this is horrible. We have to do something. We have to act. We have to stop this. So my answer to that was a op-ed in the Washington Times talking about how we should, in big cities, in my city in particular, Washington, D.C., which has been, you know, set out by ISIS as this is where they're coming. They're going to come and attack here. And now they've shown this week that they can influence people to go ahead and carry out these attacks. So my op-ed was saying we need to allow people to more easily get permits to conceal carry. And then we would have the ability to have all these soft targets like a regional, you know, care place in California that are soft targets right now. They might not be so soft. And so you do, if you don't deter the terrorists from doing it at all, you at least make it so it's not as lethal. You don't have 14, 15, you know, 130 people killed like in Paris. You limit the ability that they are able to wreak havoc and destruction and death.
Yes. And that's one of those things that is, people automatically want to jump to, oh, you're just calling for more guns. But just think about it logically, listeners. If somebody walks into your workplace and starts shooting people indiscriminately, what do you wish you could do at that moment? I would think you would want to stop it some way. And what would be the most effective way to stop somebody who is shooting people indiscriminately? The most effective way and immediate way is to shoot them with a gun. That's
yes,
it.
Yes, and when I got in that debate with the woman, the leftist woman on Megyn Kelly's show last week, she was citing science and saying that science shows that you should use a coffee mug or a chair or something and throw it at the attacker. And I was thinking, no one in their right mind wouldn't prefer a 9mm over a coffee mug. That's the effective way to deter that type of attack.
When she said that, I wanted to throw my coffee mug at my television.
I don't blame you.
But think it like honestly, just think about that logically. Somebody, again, and I know this is scary, I'm not trying to be facetious here, but I'm not trying to trigger anyone's sort of, you know, if you've been through a very traumatic experience here, but just picture in your mind, wherever you work, or even your home, God forbid, somebody who is hell-bent on killing you walks through your door. You can hide and or pretend you're dead. There's various ways to do it. And yeah, maybe, I guess, if there's a coffee mug there, you throw it at him, you might have a shot at ricocheting a bullet or something. But what is the most effective way? What is the quickest way? What is the most direct way to stop that person immediately? It's with a bullet, either in between his eyes or to his kneecaps or to his chest, or even maybe just the sound of an actual weapon going off might give him second thoughts, like, oh my gosh, I might die if I continue on this mission here.
Right.
And these two terrorists in San Bernardino clearly didn't want to die, at least in the beginning. This wasn't a suicide thing. So yes, if one person there, and I'm not in any way, shape, or form blaming any of these victims here, but if there just happened to be somebody at that party who was a gun owner and could legally conceal carry in California, who's to say that they wouldn't have at that moment maybe stopped him? And maybe we'd be talking about 8 deaths today or 4 deaths today, not 14, and the countless other people wounded.
And we see sheriffs and deputies around the country, like Ulster County, New York, and Detroit, the city of Detroit, law enforcement people are asking for help. They're saying, if you have the ability to, you know, if you're already trained, get your concealed carry permit, start carrying, help us out, because the police cannot be everywhere. The New York Police Commissioner went out there and said all of New York City is a soft target, and the police cannot be everywhere at all times. So if you figure, you know, we have 300 million guns in circulation right now in the United States, and right now we have 13 million concealed carry permit holders, and that doesn't include, I think there are like 8 states where you don't need a permit to carry, so it doesn't include people who are carrying in those states. But you figure that is really an ability to make the United States less of a soft target and to prevent some of these attacks from being so lethal. And, you know, certainly if you are in the situation, you have to throw a coffee cup or, you know, make do with whatever you can, then you do. But why shouldn't our president, instead of out there pushing gun control, pushing that, why doesn't he say everyone should really take your own security seriously, and we should, you know, enable citizens to be trained and be able to become part of this ability to strike back against a very vicious enemy that, you know, the videos that are coming out all the time from ISIS are just horrifying, and we should enable the citizenry to help, you know, be an effective weapon against that.
By the way, Gail Trotter just mentioned ISIS, who is the most lethal terrorist organization in the world right now. And this just broke earlier, moments ago, less than an hour ago, that this is according to CNN.com, as the San Bernardino attack was happening, investigators believe the female shooter, Tashfeen Malik, posted on Facebook pledging allegiance to ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. 3 U.S. officials familiar with the investigation told CNN. So she pledged her allegiance to ISIS before the attack. This was an ISIS attack. This was an act of war. This was a terrorist attack, which rational people concluded, I think, the morning after it,
right,
after we found out stuff, you know. But then, and we talked about this earlier, like CNN continued for half the day yesterday, still treating this as some sort of mass shooting. And then, let's nitpick and fine tune about all the gun laws in California. Which law, you know, what is it going to take to stop gun violence and all that? And then, as more information came in, no, this actually wasn't a Columbine or a movie theater sort of mental nutcase shooting. This was a premeditated, very organized, influenced and learned about, you know, these pipe bombs. We had a CBS News correspondent on earlier, Gail. These pipe bombs, this pipe bomb factory that existed in this guy's apartment, the specifications of the pipe bombs were almost to the T from an Al-Qaeda book online on how to make pipe bombs and create mayhem. Like, there's no, like, possibility. It's not, we're hypothesizing here that he might have been influenced by Islamic radicalism. No, he was an Islamist terrorist, and the woman was pledging her allegiance to ISIS. So this is ISIS attacking us here in the United States. There's no other way to put it.
And think of how much training he must have had, because I don't know if you remember, but I remember lots of stories from, I wasn't around in the 60s, but there were a lot of stories in the 60s of revolutionary Americans who would, you know, try to do bombs, and the bombs
anarchist
would go
cookbook,
off,
right?
And they would die, or they'd get injured, and then the police would realize, oh, you know, they're bad people doing these things in townhouses in New York or wherever else. But this guy had a lot, and there was never any evidence. There was never any mishap that drew anybody's attention. So you think he must have had a lot of, you know, time and attention and training devoted to that, despite the fact that he had a full-time job as a U.S. government employee or a California government employee.
Yeah, well, when we're finding out more about him and his wife, these terrorists, you know what it's reminding me of? And just I remember after September 11th, in the weeks after it, I used to be a Newsweek subscriber back when people used to read magazines.
Yeah.
And I remember reading the follow-ups in the weeks and months after. I just started grad school, and I probably, my first semester or so of grad school, didn't get the greatest grades because I was so consumed by the news. It was I started right after September 11th. And reading about the background of the terrorists from the 9/11 attacks,
right?
And it is very similar to this this Tashin Malik and this other guy, her husband. They were living normal lives. That's what you do. That's you want to be as inconspicuous as possible, and they were doing very, very similar, living just normal American lives before they struck like a terrorist. Anyway,
yes,
we're gonna take a break.
Jobs are
Go
the
ahead.
Answer.
Say that again.
I don't think jobs are the answer to defeat terrorism.
Jobs? No. Jobs is not the answer to defeat terrorism. We're gonna take a break and continue with Gail Trotter from the Independent Women's Forum after this on the Michael Coogan Show. Stay with us. We're back on the Michael Coogan Show, live Rise Broadband Studios. We're getting ready for our party, our Christmas party. It's happening later today, 401 North 6th Street, downtown Rochelle, Illinois. We're giving it two TVs and an Amazon Kindle Fire HD, compliments of the Rochelle News Leader, the Comfort Inn and Suites Rochelle, Rochelle Swim and Fitness, Chicagoland Skydiving Center, Flight Deck Bar and Grill, and all of the food, all of the accoutrements, all the hot chocolate, all the eggnog, the popcorn, the Chick-fil-A food, the chips, the Christmas cookies, all of that, the whole party is being sponsored at large by Rise Broadband. We continue with Gail Trotter from the Independent Women's Forum, still digesting this latest information that this was an ISIS attack. This is kind of the latest information we have on this. But the Tashfeen Malik, the woman who partook in this terrorist attack and killed 14 people and injured 20-plus others before the attack, according to CNN, pledged her allegiance to ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. So this is as modern and as ISIS-related as you can possibly be as far as a homegrown terror attack here in the United States. So I'd like to think now, when we watch the news later this evening and this weekend and maybe the Sunday talk shows, we're not going to be talking about like Moms Demand Action, or we're not going to be talking about like Wayne LaPierre is a terrorist, the head of the NRA. That was another thing that the Daily News put on their front page this morning. I hope maybe we're going to have the discussion about how we confront ISIS that has now attacked us here on our homeland. Gail, your thoughts?
It is fascinating to me that a personal detail of the attack involved the two suspected gunmen of going to the man's mother's house and dropping off their, I think it was a six-month-old daughter.
Yeah.
And they told the mother that they had a doctor's appointment or something. And that, to me, is such an important detail that has been glossed over a little bit. I mean, when you think about what kind of mental state it takes and commitment to cause that you would go drop off a tiny, tiny child and then go into a place with all sorts of innocent people and deliberately kill them and hurt them. And, you know, like you were saying, it seemed like they wanted to survive, but they certainly knew that they probably were running the risk of getting shot down. And then who would raise that child? It just, I think it gives you a kind of understanding along the lines of these ISIS videos that we see being released this week of children doing unspeakable things I don't even want to talk about.
Yes.
It just shows it's so incompatible with American values and an American way of life and American understanding. And I think, unfortunately, Americans are starting to wake up that this is a fight like no other that we have seen in our lifetime.
No. And it is as modern, again, and as they're evolving. Like, the attacks are evolving. Remember, when September 11th happened in 2001, it's easy now to look back and say, oh, yeah, well, obviously, we know why it takes so long to get through security lines at airports now, and we can't have anything, you know, with blades on it or anything in our baggage. But remember how absolutely shocking it was when we heard that those planes were taken down by box cutters, basically. Not guns, not a pipe bomb, not a hand grenade, box cutters. And to say and to postulate that that might happen in 1999 or 2000, people would have thought you were crazy, you know, conspiracy theory type of people. I don't think, and people have said this, you know, we haven't had any threats of planes being brought down by box cutters since September 11th. Terrorists aren't stupid. They're evolving. They're changing their tactics. And when they made this attack on Wednesday, it was different than a lot of the other things we've seen before. How did you consume it, by the way? Were you at home when you first heard about it on the news? Did you watch it live? Were you online? And what were your initial thoughts when you heard that these terrorists got away, so they weren't suicide bombers, and that they were heavily armed and, you know, dressed in sort of military gear and whatnot?
I was driving, so I was listening to the reports on the news, and I have Sirius in my car, so I was able to go from CNN to Fox and MSNBC and try and compare, you know, the different ways that they were reporting it. And my biggest fear was that it would be like a Paris-style attack, where it wasn't just, at first they reported it was three suspects.
Right.
I was worried that it wasn't just those three, but it was going to be multiple cells that were attacking different places in the city and perhaps even in other cities. I mean, being in Washington, D.C., we have felt for a very long time that we have had a target on our back. So anytime anything like that happens, you just become a little bit more worried that something will be brought, even if it's in California, that it could be coordinated with something here as well, or it would inspire something to happen here as well. And I think it is just ridiculous. It's like Rudy Giuliani said on, I can't remember what news show he was on, but he said it was obvious based on the tactical gear, based on the fact that it was two or three people, it was obvious that it was a terrorist attack. Now, we still don't know the specific motivation of why they chose that place or specifically what they were trying to accomplish, you know, what message they were trying to send, but anybody would be a moron, as Rudy Giuliani said, not to know that that was a terrorist attack. And, you know, you had that contrast. I've been approached and done some interviews about the Planned Parenthood shooting the week before, and immediately everyone jumped into all Christians are to blame for this. Anybody
yes.
who's pro-life is to blame for this. Any congressional politicians are to blame for the Planned Parenthood shooting because
Center for Medical Progress, who shed
yes.
light on this awful baby parts scandal that they're embroiled in. They have contributed. The Planned Parenthood woman, the spokeswoman herself, said that those that are engaging in that debate are to blame. Her. Even the president didn't go that far like she did. Yeah, absolutely shameful.
And I think when you put all of that in together, you see that these incidents are treated very differently by our intelligentsia, by our political elites, by our media elites. And it all goes back to, you know, what is their frame of reference? What types of policies are they advancing? Are they advocating anything that happens? you have to take with a grain of salt their reporting of it, because they are trying to advance outlook or worldview that helps them to accomplish their policy goals.
Right, right. And we've mentioned this numerous times after a mass murder that happens in some of the other ones. But it's the immediate reflex to push your agenda, even if it's an agenda I agree with, is just so gauche, you know? It's just so, like unappealing and just wrong. But people don't care anymore. Like
They don't. And
they don't care at all.
We decided to go back and watch United 93, which is the film about the plane on 9/11 that was successfully overthrown by the passengers rebelling against the terrorists, and it went down into, a cornfield in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. And something you said reminded me of a part of that movie about how terrorists change tactics. The passengers are all arguing with each other because one of the terrorists says he has a bomb, and he has this visual cue of batteries and a line. It looks like he's going to blow up the plane. And the passengers are arguing because they're saying, no, they're going to take us back to the airport and they're going to get a big ransom for us. And we can't do anything. We just have to cooperate with them. So much so that one of the passengers, they tackled him because he was trying to alert the terrorists to the fact that they were going to try and overtake the terrorists and gain control of the plane again. And I think that just underscores your point that the terrorists change tactics. And we saw that in the Russian airplane that went down on the Sinai Peninsula near Sharm el-Sheikh, where they used a bomb. I think they think it was in a soda can or some small thing, and it was able to get past security. So it's not box cutters. It's the next thing. I mean, they have endless amount of time to try and thwart all of the things that we can come up with. And so that's why I keep making the point about concealed carry. You know, the government can protect us, but only so far, because the government tends to be reactive.
Right.
Instead of proactive.
But in the Army, we used to always call it fighting the last war. At a global scale, after Vietnam, all throughout the 80s, all right, we're going to teach everyone how to fight in jungles. Well, what if the next war is on a desert? Well, the next war was in a desert, you know, or the next couple of them. And it's a similar way with this terrorism fight. We rightfully made measures and put measures in place with the TSA, and you know, some of it's a little overkill, but after somebody takes down two or four planes and kills almost 3,000 people with box cutters, we're going to make sure that that doesn't happen again. But the terrorists have adapted. They're going to do something different. And that was the other thing. You mentioned, why did they attack this particular place, this developmentally disabled building, this government office? It was a soft target, right? It's one of the places that they would have least expected an attack. So yeah, if I'm a terrorist, I might want to hit the Sears Tower, I might want to hit the White House, I might want to hit Capitol Hill, but of course there's tons of security there. Let's go the path of least resistance here and go to some obscure place. And again, these terrorists, like these two terrorists in San Bernardino, California, can live anywhere, can be radicalized anywhere if they have a freaking laptop or a computer, and they're reading ISIS stuff. And so I know the immediate thing a lot of people say, Gail, is, well, you're just trying to get everyone scared and get everyone in a panic here. I'm not saying that we should be scared and that, you know, we can't go to the grocery store because that might be a soft target. But for crying out loud, let's defend ourselves here in the case that something like this were to happen in the millions, literally millions of soft targets throughout the United States. We should be able to conceal carry everywhere so that, yes, we might be able, we might need to take matters into our own hands if we're happen to, God forbid, be at a place where some ISIS sympathizer and terrorist, homegrown here, right here in the United States, wants to kill people.
Right, and we should not be afraid. This should not be a call to people to panic or be anxious or anything like that. We should just be prepared, and we should have leadership from Washington, D.C. that calls out the threat our largest threat right now is not climate change, which may or may not happen. And if it does happen, the effects won't be felt for at least, 50, 100 years. How about we talk about what people are dying of right now? How about we have leadership on what is causing it and an effective strategy and implementation of the strategy to reduce the threat? Not only for Americans' lives and comfort and security, but also for the world. I mean, we do have a responsibility. I've written about this a lot. We do have a responsibility as the world's, city shining upon a hill to try and help the rest of the world become more free, become more prosperous, become, places where people can live out their lives in peace and security. And I don't see that coming out of our leadership in Washington, D.C. right now.
No, and that's the last question I was going to ask you, Gail. The current president seems to be waiting out the clock. These awful things are happening. I mean, I hope I'm proven wrong. I hope he has kind of a wake-up call here, maybe this weekend or something, or maybe the Christmas season inspires him to say, wait a second, I have to, as my in my position as commander-in-chief of the military, take this ISIS threat seriously. We're going to need to start knocking some heads here. And I'll be the first to stand up and applaud him if he decides to do that. But I'm not holding my breath. It seems like we're just going to, he's just waiting it out and giving this problem to the next president. And then that brings us to the presidential race. The last time, the Paris attacks happened right before the Democrats debated, and they stuck to their guns on climate change. Still a bigger threat than ISIS or anything else, Bernie Sanders said, and Hillary Clinton echoed a little bit more. The Republican debate is in, I believe, next week, the next one, and then the Democrats are on another Saturday night, December 15th. What do you want to hear from the next commander-in-chief of either party as far as this threat from Islamist extremist terrorism goes?
It's interesting because I just posted a piece that I did not write, but a friend of mine, Ben Weingarten, wrote about the, debate in the Republican side of the presidential candidates right now. Lindsey Graham came out criticizing Ted Cruz, as Marco Rubio had done as well, because of Ted Cruz's support on reining in the overreach of the National Security Administration's or agency's collection of all sorts of data, this megadata on Americans, without any warrant, without any, legitimate reason why this massive amount of data is needed. And I think the events from last week and this week underscore the point that the government can't make sense of the information that it has now enough to stop these things from happening. And there are real security privacy concerns that are implicated when the government is able to get into people's private business, like we saw with the IRS, and use it to political advantage. So it's interesting to see Lindsey Graham and Marco Rubio pounding on Ted Cruz because they say, they're essentially accusing him of doing the most to enable the jihadists and the radical Islamic terrorists because of his opposition to this NSA overreach. And yet, people like Lindsey Graham have been wrong on these issues over and over again. He wanted Gaddafi to be overthrown. Graham was out there saying we should be overthrowing Gaddafi, even though Gaddafi had given up his nuclear weapons program. He had been tamed by the overthrow of Saddam Hussein. He was working with us to try and battle against the radical Islamic jihadists. And now, since obviously Gaddafi was overthrown, murdered, everything descended into chaos there, and now it's a stronghold for ISIS that's not very far away from the European mainland. We saw that with Graham, too. He tried to, arm the moderate Syrian refugees, and now we understand that we really can't tell who are the good guys in the Middle East right now and who are not the good guys. They all kind of slip in and out of different things, and we don't have a good understanding of that. So I think Ted Cruz is the strongest on these issues, and I think we'll see that in the next debate because obviously this is going to be the most pressing topic on the Republican side.
Gail, the Independent Women's Forum, is there anything else you want to add before we say goodbye? I know it's been As every time we talk with you, there's bigger stuff to talk about. This might be the biggest one. I mean, the first ISIS attack. I think we're still kind of absorbing all this, but we can call it that now. As of this morning, The first ISIS attack here in the United States on our soil happened on Wednesday. We can conclude that now. CNN, if you're just joining us, reported that the woman of the male-female couple of terrorists who engaged in this attack and killed 14 people on Wednesday pledged her allegiance to ISIS right before she did it. So this was an ISIS attack. Anything else you want to add about this or anything positive before we say goodbye this week?
Well, I have to say something negative because I think it's really important to get everyone aware of this, that the Secretary of Defense, Ash Carter, announced yesterday that women are cleared for all combat positions in the U.S. military. And I've written about the dangers of this before, and I think it is a terrible idea. And I think the problem that we will have is as women are allowed to be in these positions, that means they're going to be put in those positions. And we've already had lawsuits saying that women should be included in the Selective Service Registration. Once you do that, if we ever have a draft, then we will be putting our sisters, our daughters, our mothers into the military service so that they're in the front lines. And when you think about what ISIS is doing to the Syrian soldiers that they capture overseas and putting videos up, I'd just like to imagine that that would happen to American women and that we would have to watch that and endure that. And it's just a frightening, frightening thought. And I hope that...
Go ahead.
You've been in the military, so I'm sure you probably have strong opinions on this one way or the other. But the thought that we are having this done by the Secretary of Defense with no debate, no discussion of the American public, and the ramifications for what it has for our military preparedness and our, you know, emotional wherewithal to go to war if we need to, I think we need to reflect on that a little bit more.
It's very well put, and it's and I agree, I do agree with you. If nothing else, this whole timing of this, for crying out loud, we
right.
just had a terrorist attack here in the United States. We're still talking about Paris and still dealing with this. And you want to tinker with a pretty major change to our military right now? Like, maybe if this was something on the agenda, maybe we put a pause on it for a couple of months, maybe, or years or something. But, like, in the middle of where we should be talking about, you know, what size of units might be deployed in certain areas or what sort of tactics we can engage, we're talking about tinkering with an extremely huge ramification deal, the least of which, or not, I would say the worst of which, actually, is what you just said, the worst-case scenario of females being in all, on all different types of things in the military, of jobs in the military. They just seem so tone-deaf, this administration, to what's going on in the world and reacting to things. It's just, oh, no, we have our agenda. No matter what's going on in the world, we're going to enact this agenda. Close Gitmo? Yeah, we said we're going to close it on that particular date, even with whatever's going on in the world. We're going to close it. They're just... It's a pig-headedness almost that just continues to flummox me. Gail, we unfortunately are out of time. We always enjoy having you on. Thanks so much for coming back on to the Michael Kulich Show. We will chat with you one more time, I hope, before Christmas.
Great to be with you, Michael.
We'll be right back.